All year round, Frontier Home Products and Design has what you need to make your home comfortable and beautiful. Relax on a new timber tech deck designed by Frontier's experts. A new fireplace from Frontier Home Products Fireplace Gallery adds warmth and serenity to any home. Beauty and versatility at Frontier Home Products and Design Center, 4213 Peachtree, 5th next to the Bayfront Highway.
Frontier Home Products and Design Center. Discover a new frontier.
PA contractor number PA039007.
I'm Jody Crumpy, director of the Erie City Mission Thrift Stores and Donation Center. When you shop at one of our two thrift stores or drop off items at our donation center, you are providing a meal, you are housing a man in our shelter, helping men and women overcome addiction, and giving our inner city youth an opportunity to learn. I want to thank you for making a difference. This is our city, our mission. God bless you.
Welcome to TalkErie.com's Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast. Every day, we tackle the biggest issues that the Erie, PA region faces. Stay informed and involved as we advance the narrative of Erie. Now, here's Joel Natale.
We're super excited to invite back into our conversations here, Boo Haggerty from the Hammett Health Foundation. Boo, welcome back to the show. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be back, Joel.
You got it here. Let's remind people kind of your origin story. You're an Erie kid, famous Haggerty family. Talk about how you grew up.
Okay, great. Yeah, sure. Youngest of five boys. My nickname.
Youngest. Okay.
Well, my nickname was Boo Hoo. Because I cried all the time because I beat up and the who dropped and the boo stuck. So that's a whole nother, that's a whole show right there, Joel.
But
grew up in the Glenwood area, you know, K through 12, you know, in Catholic schools, St. Peter's and prep, all that.
What did your dad do? Was he in,
my dad was
politics?
PR, marketing, all his government relations, all his life. Yeah. He had a bunch of different roles. My dad was at Hammett the last 30 years of his career.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and okay. After he retired, I was hired in 2000 as their vice president of marketing.
Who was the mayor that was a Haggerty?
Well, C. Francis Haggerty was my namesake. He was the city treasurer of Erie for 40 years.
He
still holds a state record. He would 10 consecutive four-year terms.
So city treasurer.
1936 to 1976. We're dating ourselves now, Joel.
Wow.
Yeah. But I was actually, my name is Charles Francis Haggerty, named after my grandfather.
Fantastic.
Fantastic. Yeah. So Erie family, I love your studio. You know, we were just talking about that, just being right on State Street. I could see where his office was in City Hall, and
wow,
it's our home. So.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So Erie, you know, and the Hammett Health Foundation, a little bit of that story there.
Yeah, so the Hammett Health Foundation is the 501c3 that supports UPMC Hammett. But when I was able to kind of come under my management in 2010, one of the things that I wanted to do with our board and our team is to really tackle the social determinants of health. What are the things getting in the way of people being healthy? And quite frankly, we do a great job of treating people when they hit our doors, but how do we not have them be so sick that they hit our doors? And what are the prevention tools that we can do? We've been tackling it for a long time, Joel, but 2019 was a big year for us when we actually surveyed the neighborhood of 16503, that zip code. And it's really identified as one of the unhealthiest neighborhoods in the state.
Really?
And we surveyed the neighbors and we trained the folks in the neighborhood to talk to their, so the focus groups were run by the neighbors.
Okay.
And it was really great methodology. And about 750 of them talked to us for an average of 30 minutes. And they told us kind of what they needed to kind of expand their horizons, if you will. And they told us they needed trusted access to healthcare. They felt like they needed to trust the providers that they were seeing. And we had to learn what that meant. And we have learned along the way. They told us they wanted better job opportunities, but that meant career development. That meant affordable, you know, education.
Yeah.
And they told us they wanted to live in the neighborhood, but they wanted to be safer. They wanted their homes to be repaired. They needed some resources to do that. That informed our decision to invest heavily and rebuild the Wayne School.
Okay.
So inside the Wayne School is now our School of Nursing. It's the Erie Center for Arts and Technology, and the training. I was there last night with our central sterile processing class. So 12 people who are learning how to work in our central sterile processing department, which is provides all the instruments for the surgeons upstairs. And so we're training them. We have medical assistant training. We have trades training going on, all at no cost to the student at ECAP. The School of Nursing, run by UPMC, is a tuition-based 16-month RN program.
Right.
We've graduated 110 nurses already from that program. But that, now we're trying to invest in neighborhoods. But inside there is a primary health network, which has Wayne Primary Care. Mm-hmm. And there's a pharmacy in there, Darling's Pharmacy. And that building is full. And we're going to be... That's a whole nother show to talk about how we're expanding that neighborhood.
Is that right?
Yeah, we have four acquisitions ready to go, not ready to be announced, but okay. Four acquisitions ready to go that will expand our campus and allow us to grow those services. So that's so our foundation in a nutshell, our mission is leading the way to better health. Mm-hmm. And the way to do that is prevention, but it's not disease management prevention, it's social needs that aren't being met.
Wow.
And we're tackling those in a bunch of different ways. We can talk about some of those today.
Well, it's interesting to think about, you know, if you can catch, let's say, an ailment in primary care,
yeah,
it's going to just take a load off of the ER. I mean, there's a...
That was our first metric.
Yeah.
That was our first metric. You know, the zip code that I just described was an habitual user of the emergency room for non-emergent needs.
Right.
And it's a bottleneck for everybody, mm-hmm. including them. Mm-hmm. So how do we get primary care at, you know, right care, right place, right time? That's what we talk about.
Yeah.
And we were able to start to deliver that. So when we opened Wayne Primary Care, which is prior to the whole development of Wayne School, right. That's a whole nother history lesson. But when we opened Wayne Primary Care, we can decompress the emergency room with non-emergent visits by about 23%.
That's a huge marker.
It's a big marker. Yeah.
Wow.
And it again, right care, right place, right time. Yeah. But then it's more cost effective for everybody as well. So we do a lot of stuff. We only have, I don't know how long we have, but no, but we don't have enough time to. But
yeah.
We're, you know, right above us right now where we are two apartments that we have that families can stay in if they're here for long term stays. In our NICU.
For the NICU, yeah.
Yeah, so there's just a lot of different things that we're able to do. We just started McGee Women's Research Institute here. I have a vision someday of another whole new building.
Seriously, wow.
Yeah, we could have a whole hour just on the women's health research going on in this community. I could bring you some of our physicians who are doing amazing work in that spectrum. But there's 1,000 women in our community in clinical trials right here in McGee Women's at Hammett.
Amazing.
That would have to have gone out of town for those clinical trials. It's just, you know, right care, right place, right time.
One more
sure.
thought about, you know, like primary care and that whole access to care.
Mm-hmm.
And it's come up since we've talked about the new bank that's coming online on Parade Street.
Yep.
The idea of trust mm-hmm. and having folks in maybe in that zip code that trust was never built with a community or something like that.
Correct.
What are you seeing that is tangibly working in trust building? Is it just visceral one-on-one communication and relationship?
It's one-on-one. I can tell you five stories I know of. Nursing students, these are very bright, five very bright young women that never saw a trajectory for them to get into the nursing field in the traditional way. Being in Wayne School, where our didactic classes are taught, that was a comfortable neighborhood for them to go to school, number one.
And it's a beautiful place, clean, easy
pristine.
To get to.
Pristine. Anyone's invited anytime. It's open to the public.
It's a gorgeous location.
Pristine. We put $12 million into it, and it really turned out perfectly. So number one, the location. Number two, to have a student advisor who's with them every step of the way, because the social needs of those students needed to be met. There was childcare challenges. There was challenges between work and going to school because a lot of folks have to keep working while they're going to school. There were domestic challenges. There's a lot of different challenges that these folks face, all social. And we had to break those down and help them. We help people get safe, affordable housing. But five particular people never had a banking account.
Really?
Never. So we got them checking accounts, you know, like by the way, and I'm very proud to say I'm a board member of Erie Bank.
Oh, yeah.
So it was great because we brought them to Erie Bank, and Erie Bank not only did that for them, these were folks that probably didn't have a credit score worthy of a loan, but they gave them school loans to finish some things up. Well, I take that back. They necessarily weren't school loans.
You're right.
But we had to free up some cash to pay tuition. So car loan, a loan, and maybe just a quick loan to kind of get some of the rent paid and things like that. Very, very challenging time for that 16 months they were going to school. All graduated, all started jobs right after graduation, average $30 an hour.
Wow.
$10,000 signing bonus, and they're on, now their trajectory is family sustaining wages that they can handle.
A total life change, Boo.
It's such a win-win. Total life change for them. Now we have five wonderful nurses at the bedside.
Yeah.
Again, people who didn't think they'd ever be able to be a nurse, who that was their dream, and they didn't see a pathway. And that pathway was created. And we're really, really proud of that, and we're excited about it. But you got to scale that. We got to do that 5 times, 10 times, 20 times what I'm talking about.
Wow.
And we will. We will. Yeah. We're talking about generational change. So, yeah. So it's exciting.
We've got Boo Haggerty from the Hammett Health Foundation with us. And Boo, we want to start our conversation about homelessness.
Great.
And I, again, launching into this effort, obviously this has been on people's radar for decades.
Yes.
But what's the new impetus coming from the Hammett Health Foundation about this?
Yeah. Start from the beginning, and it's really quick. Bruce Katz was asked by community leaders to really do an assessment of economic development in our community. And I'm very fortunate, Joel. I've worked in a position at Hammett for 24 years now, where I've gotten to know a lot of the great community leaders. And I was fortunate enough to be asked to be on a panel of about 50 people who were asked, what does Erie need to do for economic development? We all had different answers. What was interesting, and this wasn't something that I brought up, it wasn't something that I thought of during my interviews, but a lot of people did, that homelessness is a barrier to economic development. And it came up as the third priority out of 35 to say we have to tackle homelessness. So as we're getting these results as the survey group, Bruce, it was a Teams call, post-COVID, but it was a Teams call. And Bruce said, how are we gonna tackle homelessness? And I just kind of raised my hand. I said, I don't know much about it, but I'm willing to dig in and see what I can learn.
Yeah.
And what I did is I then talked to our hospital administrators and our case management workers. I said, how many homeless patients do you think we have right now? And that day it was 12. We couldn't discharge any of them because there was nowhere to send them.
Wow.
So we need, you know, they were ready to be discharged from the hospital. We needed those beds for 12 other patients,
right. But
there's nowhere to send them. And I'm like, shame on us, and I'll be very transparent, that we haven't thought about this before, that we haven't leaned into this one before. And I think our case managers have, and they would call the shelters of the Yumas and the Mercy Centers and the Communities of Caring and just all the different places, there's many city mission, you know, you could name them all. And they would, if they had a bed, they'd help. If they didn't, they couldn't. So I said, well, we got to dig into this. So Karen Billowith, who's the president of the Community Foundation, and myself and a couple others got together with the county and the city and said, let's really tackle this problem from a different point of view. How do we support the shelters and not have them have to have this overflow and this burden of saying no? Because these shelters, they're doing humanitarian God's work.
Yeah.
And they don't want to turn anyone away, but there's only so much capacity. So we learned that there are chronically homeless people, chronically meaning more than 12 months that you've had nowhere to live. And we're not even talking the couch surfing. We're talking nowhere. So Karen Billowith, who is a breath of fresh air to this community. When Karen was hired by the Community Foundation, she came in and she did this in Boise, Idaho.
Okay.
And worked with a consultant named Wyatt Schrader. Now, Wyatt and I were with you here and with Lathan and Tina. But Wyatt is bringing best practice to our community. So we cobbled the money together to hire Wyatt as a consultant. And that's the last time I'll use that word consultant. Wyatt has been a partner. Like he is right in the trenches with us. Mm-hmm. Wyatt came to town to really assess this. And he brought to us what's called the Housing First model. The Housing First model is not a model that has been really adopted in Erie that sticks, if you will. And that is to permanently house a person with no barriers whatsoever. It does not matter if there's a mental health issue, a chronic alcohol or drug issue, a physical health issue. Wherever they are, we need to meet them where they are and give them a place to live. The other part, supportive services. So you wrap around all the supportive services around them. So once you get them a place to live, then you hire an organization who their full-time job is to take care of these chronically homeless folks. And if on a daily basis, showing up to say, are you taking your medicine? Are you seeing your doctor? Are you doing the things? You're getting the counseling? Are you getting all the therapies you need to kind of get things back together? And that was a model that it's breathtakingly expensive to do something. Yeah. Think about housing 150 people and they don't have a penny.
Wow.
So we started really digging into how can we do this. And I'm happy to tell you today that we are making tremendous headway and finding the right partners to do it. So an RFQ went out to find a housing provider. And out of Cleveland, and Cleveland does not have a homelessness issue because Cleveland has an organization called Cleveland Housing Network that they build apartment buildings all around their communities.
Wow.
And no questions asked, work with the county, find the most chronically homeless, give them a key to their apartment, say, here it is, ready to go.
Amazing.
And there's HUD vouchers that pay for all this.
Right.
And then you give them those services and just start supporting them. And again, we're talking about the folks who are really the worst of the worst that had the most issues.
Well, and that really brings up the point of the person that does not want to be tied down. That's got to be where the supportive services and, you know, the high touch approach kicks in, right? Because you hear these stories that, you know, we can give them everything and they'll still be out on the street because of their choice path.
Yeah, this is not work for the weak. Okay. There's no doubt about it. This is hard work to keep, once you get them housed, to keep them housed. Because their social outlet is that bench where they hang out with some of their folks, or that tent community maybe where they hang out, and that becomes home. And you have to understand that psyche to say that, you know, so we're going to cluster this group. They won't just one here, one there. They need those social networks, but they'll build those social networks with their caregivers as well. They're going to build strong relationships. And I'm not talking about something that we're making up here. This is battle tested in communities all around the country. And the model is such that they do build these relationships with their care managers, you know, and it's called blended case manager, and someone who's just with them every day if they need to be. And there's many success stories of getting them healthy, feeling good about themselves, get them a job, you know, get them into the workforce and get them cured from all the problems they had. Addiction isn't what made them homeless. The homelessness led to the addiction. Mental health isn't why they're homeless. The mental health issues came from being homeless. You know, one of the early lectures I heard on this, and I'm a novice on this, Joel. I mean, I'm just learning this as I go. But I heard a great lecture on this to say that the Geneva Convention says that if you have a prisoner, they have to have 8 hours sleep in that 24-hour period. You cannot sleep deprive a prisoner. It's against the Geneva Convention. Because people, after 2-3 nights without sleep, don't have all their faculties. So if the three of us in this room went about 72 to 80 to 100 hours without sleep or with an hour on a concrete, we wouldn't be in our right minds.
And that is fascinating.
Think about that. So that's why some of the problems that they're having, it's because they're deprived of the basic necessity of life, which is I don't know about you, but tonight I'm going home. I'm going to try to hit a good 6 to 8, you know, without anyone waking up, and I'll be pretty comfortable.
Yeah. Warm comforter, yeah. Soft bed.
Right.
Yeah.
Without that, I don't know how I'm doing the next day.
Yeah.
Have you ever had 2 nights in a row where you don't sleep well? How'd you do at work the third day?
Exactly.
So that's how I started to think about, these are human beings. These are our neighbors. These are our friends. These are not bums on the street. And we have to, as a community, change our mindset about this population and say that these are not people who choose this life. These are people through whatever path that led them to this life, and this is the way out. So give them a place to live, put all the supportive services. So we hired Cleveland Housing Network. They're gonna help us identify a site and build a 50-unit apartment building in Erie.
What has been the limiting factor over these decade or two that we've been trying to be real intentional about homelessness?
You know, it's hard for me to say because so many good people are doing this work. I would say this model is maybe fairly new. It's been out there forever. I think cost.
Yeah.
Certainly cost is a huge issue. You know, if you're going to ask me right now how we're going to pay for this, I don't know.
Right.
But we're going to figure it out. I can tell you that. I mean, we're definitely going to figure it out. And I think the other thing, just to a certain extent, I do believe that post-COVID, we're paying a little bit more attention to this, at least in our community, but I think other communities as well, to say that, you know what, we all had struggles and, you know, how do we help others? There is a sense I have. The Erie Home Team, they do miraculous work.
Yeah.
You know, the folks on that home team, they do miraculous work. And we have a lot of volunteers in the street doing this work. And, you know, you have 10 guests in here, they're going to give you 10 different reasons why something did or did not happen. We have people who don't think this is the right model.
So happy to have our neighbor, Boo Haggerty from the Hammett Health Foundation. You're literally like right around the corner, aren't you?
We were around the corner. We've grown so much.
Yeah.
We moved into the 100 State Street.
Oh, you're down at 100 State.
Fifth floor. So we're still neighbors.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a nice walk today, you know.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Absolutely beautiful today.
We're talking about homelessness in Erie, and Boo's kind of blowing up our brains right now because, honestly, there's some counterintuitive things that y'all have found out during your research recently.
Yeah, for sure. You know, again, people think of folks who are unhoused as, I don't know, bums, you know, and they're just, and these are just human beings that for, you know, a couple paychecks away from losing a place to live and not being able to pull themselves out of it because their addictions, their mental health issues, their physical issues are due to the fact that they're homeless.
Yeah.
You know, so this housing first model is to get them a place to live and then immediately and every day give them the services they need to get healthy.
Off the air, you said we have a housing
scarcity.
You're
not supposed to talk about anything I say off the air, Joel. No.
Housing scarcity in Erie, Pennsylvania. Again, another counter narrative that everybody thinks, well, this is such an easy place to live, but actually our rents are pretty high and there's not enough, is there?
So it depends who you talk to. So our Wyatt came from Boise, he lives in Philly.
Yeah.
He thinks Erie's pretty affordable. He thinks Erie is a great city to be able to solve this challenge.
Okay.
You know, here's the number I haven't given you yet. The county has identified 150 people as chronically homeless. And that's a doable number. And they know that they know these individuals by name and they know their cases. And as we start to find places for them to live, they'll triage who kind of needs it first and then kind of work from there. Because we're going to get 150 apartments for these folks to live in, but it's not going to happen 150 in one day.
Yeah.
So as I mentioned to you off air, we were today looking at about 20 different properties that are part of the city land bank. Some are for sale. Some aren't. Some are vacant, but they're not for sale. And now we have to come together. When I say we, our project team, led of a bunch of community leaders, has asked landlords and or organizations to start helping develop scattered site apartments for this population. So our foundation started a brand new community development corporation last month called Build. And you'll hear a lot about our CDC called Build. And we are now going to invest our own resources and then have to get additional resources to own apartments that we can house this group of people. So we feel instead of asking everyone else to do the hard work, we're going to dig in and do some of the hard work with you. And we'll work with landlords who are willing to take this population. And the thing that's wonderful about this is the Erie City Housing Authority, you know, run by Mike Fraley and Dusty Dennis, they do fantastic work. If you've never had Mike and Dusty in here talking about what they do, they're heroes. I mean, and they're unsung. I think a lot of people don't know what they're doing. They can get vouchers to pay the rent for this population until they get back on their feet.
Wow.
And so that there's income for these investments. Because you can't say to somebody, hey, you own this apartment building, house these folks and don't charge them. Well, that doesn't work.
Doesn't work, yeah.
You know, so there's got to be a way that money churns on this thing to help this process out. And so our CDC team went out today with some of the folks from the city of Erie and started looking at property to say, we can build a duplex on this, a fourplex on this, you know, 8 units on this, and get it built pretty quickly with the right project team and the right contractors and get these folks housed. We can also look at maybe some blighted housing that no one has looked at for a while. Put some money into it, you fix it up, and you're ready to go. So there's multiple ways to do this. And there's county land bank as well. So yeah, we can, you know, we've got to look into, this isn't a downtown Erie problem. This is a Corey problem. This is a Girard problem. This is a Lake City problem. So what we're doing, Joel, is like, we believe, get to the root cause of the problem, figure out what it is. And then when you figure out what it is, find solutions and get creative in finding them. And if you worry that it's going to cost too much or it's going to be too much of a burden, or you know, you don't have the infrastructure to support it, you won't do it.
Right.
So we just find ways to say yes and just go do it. And, you know, walking over here, I just finished up a meeting with our team to debrief on how we did. And everyone's kind of like starry-eyed saying, how are we going to do this? And I said, keep going. We'll figure it out as we go. And we will. It's that old adage, you know, you're kind of like building the plane as you fly it.
Right.
Yeah, I just hope it doesn't, you know, hit the ground. So
talk about when you talk about new construction.
Yeah.
Again, that's another mind-blowing thing because we've been having conversations about just for young people to be able to afford a home. And everything I'm hearing is an entry-level home is over $200,000. Well, when I was coming up, that's not what we spent for our starter homes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what are you hearing from your contractors?
I don't listen.
The eternal optimist.
I mean, yeah. I mean, today I heard new construction's too expensive. And I, well, maybe not. Like, let's find ways to do it. There's got to be ways to do it. I mean, I won't name names, but I had a meeting this week with one of the supply companies that supplies a lot of the work, a lot of, you know, the wood, the shingles, the siding, you know. And I said, are you willing to take a haircut on this if this bothers you enough, are you willing to look at this as almost a mission related investment?
Wow.
And there are people who will say yes to that.
Yeah.
And yeah, but there's other, you know, there are community organizations that might be willing to build a couple. So I don't know yet.
You're right.
You know, I'll come back next month and tell you whether or not we crashed and burned, but I don't think we will. I think we'll find people. I think there's going to be ways to build something that's very efficient, that doesn't have to be overly expensive, and we move these folks in. Now, maybe not, Joel.
Right.
maybe it won't price out, but I don't go by, well, I'm hearing it's too much.
Right.
Let me find that out.
Yeah, just keep pushing.
Yeah.
How about some of these other concepts that you read about where, hey, we're doing tiny homes or we're doing, and having to break through some of the zoning. I mean, you're going to have to have the city behind you on all this.
So let me ask you this, Joel.
Yeah.
Okay. You've been out of a place for a year, you know. The station crashed and burned. You're done. You know.
Oh please!
I'm gonna give you 150 square feet to live in try to keep you healthy. I don't love the model. I'm just saying, yeah. And battle tested in communities that tiny homes are nice temporarily.
Yeah.
Like if it's a rainstorm and I'm on a bench, yeah, a tiny home sounds great. As a permanent place to live, we're talking about, we're building places that people could be living for the next 5 or 10 years.
Wow.
I'm not talking they're there for 2 months. Mm-hmm. They're there 5 years. We met a guy in Cleveland at one of the apartments. He'd been there 12 years.
Wow.
And that was fine. I mean, because someone asked yesterday in a seminar we had, what do you mean by permanent? The average is 5 years. You're not living in a tiny home for 5 years and keeping your sanity.
Right.
So we're going to give them a bedroom, a living room, a kitchen, you know, just a place to live that's livable. We're trying to get them healthy, not just trying to get them off a park bench. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get them healthy. So there's modular that can work, mm-hmm. For sure. But we want to move them into a place that the three of us would say, I'd live there.
Wow. You're making this a distinction between the chronically homeless,
yeah.
and other folks that are unhoused or that are in you know public housing or temporary
right.
housing. Please take this the right way, but if I were some of these people, I'd be saying, well, why are those guys getting the nice apartments and I'm in this communal housing situation?
Yeah.
That have been here for years.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great question. We have a housing challenge all around Erie, and we have to, you know, I mean, again, I've just named 5 different talk shows I could be on right with you.
Right.
Because we have to talk about workforce housing, too. We need better quality workforce housing. I'm not going to say we don't need that as well. And we're actually going to be, you know, bolting that on to this with our CDC the same time we're doing this. Some of the lots we were looking at, we're actually looking at for workforce housing as well. So it's not an either or.
Wouldn't it be cool to have a place out in the West County near the plastics plants and maybe have some skin in the game from our manufacturers out there?
It's not an either or. And it can't just be the government agencies. What we're talking about that's never been talked about in this realm is public-private partnership. It's always been public, and the private sector has not invested in this.
So interesting.
Healthcare organizations around the country, I'm not a pioneer, maybe in Erie, but nationally, there's healthcare organizations been doing this for 20 years and doing it really, really well. And I want to emulate them. They're getting into workforce housing. They're investing it for their employees. They're investing it
right.
for their, you know, the best way to keep someone healthy is to give them a quality home.
Wow.
Period.
Yeah.
So it is a good argument to say, why does he get this and she doesn't get that?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone needs something, maybe a little bit, not everyone, but a lot of people need something a little bit better than what they have, and we've got to work on that.
Have you had other people have the same response that I have had where
they
just didn't realize the extent of the issue? Basically, we thought these are the people that we see and encounter on the streets want to be on the streets.
I don't want to make you feel bad, but no, you're the only one. No, I'm just kidding. Of course, I was there.
Wow.
Of course. Absolutely. You know, I mean, we're friends here and I know we're on live radio,
right.
but it is not unusual to be parked at a red light and there's someone standing there with a sign.
Right.
And you're nervous. You're thinking, oh, they're going to knock on my window. They're going to want a buck. And then someone in the car inevitably says, well, if they would just get a job, you know, they wouldn't have to stand there with the sign. Anyone who says they haven't thought that or said that are lying to themselves.
Yeah.
However, I have learned a tremendous amount because of Wyatt, because of Karen, because of people in the county about this population. I also serve on the Safe Harbor Behavioral Health Board, and I've learned a lot. And I hang out with your brother.
Yeah.
You know, and I've learned a lot about what chronic disease looks like when it comes to mental health, and it's chronic disease. You know, I've always said if you have someone in your office who comes in and says, oh my gosh, I got a cancer diagnosis, I need some time off, take as much time as you want. I'm suffering from depression, get to work tomorrow.
It is
mental health is not understood by any stretch. And we need to do a better job as a healthcare community.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blaming ourselves here.
Yeah, we
have to do a better job as a healthcare community to address this and understand this. So no, you are not alone.
Yeah.
A lot of people have looked at this as, you know, come on, pick yourself up and let's go.
Right.
And it's just, this is a population that needs a tremendous amount of help. And I do want to say, and I didn't ask for the question, but I'm going to ask it for you.
Yeah.
The organizations that are doing this work, you know, they are dealing with episodic homelessness in beautiful ways. Yuma, Mercy Center for Women, Community of Caring, Community Resource. I mean, so many other organizations. I can't name them all. City Mission,
right.
You know, doing great work. Sisters of St. Joseph's Neighborhood, Best Neighborhood, our West Bayfront Neighborhood. So many great organizations in this community helping folks get a place to live. But episodic homelessness is very different than chronic homelessness.
Okay.
And here's the stat that is the most important stat. If somebody is chronically homeless, that's 12 months or longer without a place to live. If someone is chronically homeless and you temporarily house them, there's a 75% chance they'll be homeless again. If they're chronically homeless and you permanently house them, there's a 10% chance they'll be homeless again.
Wow.
So flip that. A 90% chance they'll never be homeless again if you give them a permanent place to live. That's all I needed to hear to say.
Right.
We're in.
But don't you think that the services and the wraparound, the mentorship,
that's
got to be there.
Well, it's a given.
Yeah.
Housing first model is housing first, but the supportive
right.
services have to come literally the day they move in. There's a story that Wyatt told in Boise of a woman who got her apartment, and for the first week, because the services weren't coming quick enough, for the first week she went and slept by the dumpster outside in the parking lot. Because she didn't believe that this was true, so
wow.
I don't want to get used to it.
Wow.
But until those counselors could really convince her, this is your place. So she went from the dumpster outside to the floor in the living room, to the floor in the bedroom, to 6 weeks later, the bed.
Wow. I'm going to throw another thing out again that I had always heard, and maybe, again, a misconception, but the idea that Erie was a services-rich environment. So folks would come up from Pittsburgh or from Philly, get out of their element of maybe drug addiction or bad behavior and try to get a new life in Erie. Is that more of an episodic situation maybe?
Yeah. That is debunked in a number of different ways. That is, yeah. I mean, maybe for a week they're going to come up, but there's a lot of people who say, well, the more service you have, the more homeless people you're going to have. It's like, that is not true. Of the 150, don't quote me in this, but I believe 90% of them from Erie County.
Wow.
Yeah. So don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
But no, that is debunked a number of different times. But yes, I have heard that. We will have people who are. I fact check everybody. You do too because you're in this business.
Yeah.
But. I have not found that in my work to be true at all. Erie's a great place to live.
Right.
I want people to come live here for sure. But no.
So your goal, I would think, is in the end, maybe 2-3 years down the road, when they do that January overnight count, that real number will be lower because you've reached your metrics.
Zero.
Zero.
That's the number we want. That not one person, that there isn't a person in the area that doesn't have a place to live.
Wow.
Why not that be the goal? I'm not saying 3 years from now we'll get there, but we're going to get there.
And we haven't even talked about like families and kids that are couch surfing and all.
There's
a bunch of people in the school district that do that.
There is, for sure. There is. And some of those families are in this number, by the way.
Okay.
Of the 150, it's not all single occupants.
Okay.
There are some families.
All right. Yeah. So how can we be an encouragement to you? What's next steps for you guys?
7-figure check. Let's go.
Okay.
No. The decimal point can be anywhere you want.
Right.
Now, you know this, Joel, I mean, talking about it, having the more people that can understand it, I appreciate so much the airwaves to be able to talk about this and talk about this intelligently. And so I think to think about it, to talk about it, most importantly, when you see that person, don't judge them. you know, and understand that that's a human being that's going through something, and that we are doing our full best to try to help that those folks. Other ways, you know, the next time you're in a group of 5 or 10 friends, kind of debunk it. If you believe anything I said today,
yeah.
you know, but
sure.
but I think those are the ways to do it. I think it's going to catch on, and we're going to be very successful. We are ready to name a service provider, and that service provider is ready to get going, even maybe before they have apartments, and kind of meet them on the street. And there are people doing street outreach.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. There's a lot of folks that interact with these people. But again, at nightfall, everyone's gone, and they're on their own to figure out where to sleep that night.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you.
And sharing all of this. Boo Haggerty, the Hammett Health Foundation. Again, we'll be watching the news for the next announcements and things.
Yeah, you are the news.
Yeah, invite us to the press conference.
Yep. Oh, you know we will, for sure.
You got it.
You've been listening to The Joel Natale Show, Erie, Pennsylvania's daily podcast from TalkErie.com. Subscribe to our show on your favorite podcatcher and get involved by emailing joel@talkerie.com.